that I'd like to introduce to you tonight, William Bailey Brunk. Dr. Brunk was born in Memphis, Tennessee, 1945, and he, believe it or not, as nature would have it, he has an identical twin brother. His family moved several times and settled in Charlotte, and he went to East Mecklenburg, if all of you don't know that. He completed the high school here and proceeded to college at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. He received a Bachelor of Arts degree with a major in chemistry. He then went on to receive a Doctor of Dental Surgery in 1971, earning numerous academic honors, including the Bill, I can't pronounce that, but it's the equivalent of Theta Phi Beta Kappa. His academic standing permitted him to pursue specialty training in the field of orthodontics. He has maintained a practice for the last 33 years in the city of Raleigh, and along the way he has been honored to serve as president of the University of North Carolina Orthodontic Alumni Association and North Carolina Association for Orthodontics. And he contributes a part of his time caring for the people at the Masonic Home for Children at Oxford and the Free Will Baptist Children's Home at Middlesex. And I know Bill won't tell you this, but one of his children attended NC State. Brother Brunk was raised a Master Mason in 1980 in Hiram Lodge in Raleigh and served as Master in 1986. He was appointed Grand Steward of the Grand Lodge of North Carolina in 1987 and later installed Grand Master of Mason in 1994. He joined the Raleigh Scottish Rite Bodies in 1984 and received the rank and decoration of KCCH in 1989 and coronated 33rd Inspector General Honorary in 1993 and was appointed personal rep for the Valley of Raleigh in 1995. As a matter of interest to us, he became our SDIG and is currently serving as Grand Orator for the Supreme Council, affiliations and membership. He's past Grand Commander of the Grand Commandery of Knights Templar of North Carolina, and he's a member of the Eastern Star and Masonic Rosicrucian, Red Cross of Constantine, Allied Masonic Degrees, Knight Masons, Council of Nine Muses, and on has numerous recognition for his civic contributions. Outstanding Individual Volunteer Service Award by Governor Jim Hunt. And again, the same honor is from Governor Jim Martin. Bill Brunk and his wife Sharon have been blessed with four children and five grandchildren. Loves to play tennis. He's an avid skier, and he's also an accomplished bridge master. Plays bridge. So, in our capacity tonight, he's going to deliver a paper to us on the Rosicrucians, which we are all looking forward to. And Bill, we thank you for making the effort to be here. Thank you.
That's true, and I hope everybody is a member of the Research Society. And if you're not, we can certainly help with that little objective too. David, thank you. It's a real pleasure to be with all of you. It's nice to be here with such a large group.
Thank you, David, my wonderful leader. Well, will you pay me later? Okay, all right. We'll need to update that resume just a tiny, tiny bit. I now have 6 grandkids and 1 more on the way. My gosh, the family just keeps growing. You're right. One of my children did attend NC State University, and he's getting ready to start there again next week to earn a master's degree in architecture. So we're real, real proud of him. I have two brothers that went to NC State. I have a daughter that went to Chapel Hill. I have another daughter that graduated from Wilmington, and my oldest son graduated from the Air Force Academy. So we've got it all sprinkled around. And I was telling a patient that late this afternoon, patient's mom, and she said, "Well, I went to Duke," and I said, "Well, my wife got a graduate degree there too." So we've got it all spread around. Do many of you know anything about Rosicrucianism, about the Rosicrucians? Have you heard of that group? You know a little bit about it? You've heard of the group? A little bit? Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing. We'll get into this paper that I did. I did this paper for the Council of Nine Muses. Actually, I think it was about a year and a half ago. And David heard me present this paper, and he said, "Maybe you could come down to Charlotte and present that paper to our research group at some point in time." We've been trying to get me here on a second Wednesday night of the month for the last year and a half. And Wednesday nights tend to be a little bit tough. Well, you notice I just rolled into town, and I've got to get back to Raleigh and see patients tomorrow morning. But I joined the Masonic Rosicrucian group, gosh, I guess about 20 years ago now, something like that. The Masonic Rosicrucian group tends to delve into historical background of a number of things. You'll learn a little bit more about that as we go through this. And it tends to be one of the esoteric groups in Freemasonry. And there are an awful lot of people that just don't know very much about it. And when it came my turn to present a paper to the Council of Nine Muses a year and a half ago, in searching around for something to talk to him about, I finally settled on Rosicrucianism. Well, people seem to be fairly interested in it, and I hope that you'll find something of interest in this this evening. A cursory glance at the question of what is Rosicrucianism quickly leads us to be struck at how complex the subject really is. Because as much as Freemasonry has been known over the years as a secretive order, well, the Rosicrucian order appears to be one much more secretive and very, very mysterious. Dating from as early as the 15th century, it is a legendary and secretive order generally associated with the symbol of the Rose Cross. Also found in certain rituals beyond craft or Blue Lodge Masonry. The Rosicrucian movement first officially surfaced in 1614 in Kassel, Germany, with the publication of Fama Fraternitatis, des Löblichen Orden des Rosenkreuzes, the Declaration of the Worthy Order of the Rosy Cross. The name Rosicrucian is thought to be derived from that symbol, a combination of a single rose upon a passion cross. Legend holds that this order was initiated with one Christian Rosenkreuz, born in 1378 in Germany. He was of good birth, but being poor, was compelled to enter a monastery at a very early period in his life. At the young and tender age of 100 years, he started with one of the monks on a pilgrimage to the Holy Sepulchre. He visited Damascus, Egypt, and Morocco, where he studied under the masters of the occult arts. Once he crossed over into Spain, however, his reception was not a terribly warm one, and he determined to return to Germany to provide his own countrymen with the benefit of his studies and knowledge, and to establish a society for the cultivation of the sciences which he had studied during his travels. Selecting three of the monks of the old convent at which he was educated, he imparted to them his knowledge under a solemn vow of secrecy. He commanded them to commit his teachings to writing and to form a magic vocabulary for the benefit of future students. They were also taught the science of medicine and ministered to all who came to them in need. With the demands of their duties continuing to grow, Father Christian, as he was called, chose to enlarge the society with the initiation of 4 new members. A lodge called the House of the Holy Spirit was constructed in order to provide a place for the society to meet. When the time arrived for these now 8 men to separate and begin the promulgation of their teachings, they bound themselves together by 6 rules. First, to make no public profession of superior knowledge, and to heal the sick free of charge. Second, to wear no special garment, but to dress according to the custom of the country in which they lived. Third, to return to the house of the Holy Spirit on a certain day each year for the purpose of mutual help and instruction. Fourth, to seek a worthy person to succeed each member. Fifth, to adopt the letters RC as their sign and mark. And sixth, to keep the existence of the fraternity a secret for a period of 100 years. At the age of 106 years, Father Christian Rosenkreutz died and was buried by the 2 brethren who had remained with him, but the place of his burial remained a secret. The society continued to exist, always consisting of 8 members. There was a tradition among them that at the end of 120 years, the grave of Father Rosenkreutz was to be discovered, and the brotherhood no longer remain a secret. About that time, the brotherhood began to make some alterations in their building, and a secret door was discovered in the house of the Holy Spirit. When the door was opened, it disclosed a burial vault with 7 sides, each 5 feet broad and 8 feet high. In the center of the vault stood an altar, beneath which lay the perfectly preserved body of Christian Rosenkreutz. Though the Fama Fraternitatis was initially published anonymously, it has generally been attributed to the philosopher and theologian John Valentine Andrea. It is thought that Andrea, along with 30 others, had sent forth the Fama Fraternitatis in the hope that they might discover the true lovers of wisdom, and that this group was the true basis for the founding of the Rosicrucian Society. Andrea, a German Lutheran pastor, had envisioned a society for the reformation of social life, and he, with or without assistance from his associates, is supposed to have created the legend and published the documents describing it. A few have seen Rosicrucianism as a complete hoax. Most believe, however, that either Andrea formed the order to combine his interest in esotericism and the reformation of society, which the documents promoted, or more likely that he wanted the documents to catalyze others to become involved in the Rosicrucian work. Although the existence of the fraternity was not made public until 1614, the influence of the brothers was felt long before that time. In his Theatrum Chemicum Britannicum, Elias Ashmole states that Queen Elizabeth was cured of smallpox by a member of the order, and that the Earl of Norfolk was healed of leprosy by a Rosicrucian physician who may have been one Robert Fludd, F-L-U-D-D, a noted physician of the time. Between 1603 and 1625, several important books appeared in which this fraternity was mentioned, the most important being the Apologia of Robert Fludd, which was published in 1616 and is still preserved in the British Museum. In 1623, there were said to be only 36 Rosicrucians in all of Europe, scattered around in 6 different countries. But by the end of the 17th century, many, many prominent men throughout Europe were identified with the Rosicrucians. One of the aims of the Rosicrucians was to combine the various branches of occultism into a whole. Many of the brothers were alchemists, seeking for the invisible spirit in inorganic as well as organic matter. Alchemy, a form of speculative thought, is perhaps best known as attempting to transform base metals into gold, and for trying to discover a cure for all diseases and a way of extending the human lifespan. It is, in fact, a system of thought related to broad disciplines including natural philosophy, medicine, astrology, metallurgy, and hermetic thinking. While modern science may have proven many of their theories untenable, it cannot be said that these men did not seek the true betterment of the world in which they lived. 1 year after the publication of the Fama Fraternitatis, the Confessio Fraternitatis was also published at Kassel, Germany, again by an unknown author, and this time in Latin rather than in German. It repeated the message of the Fama, emphasizing a new age, the hope of a reformed world with less papal tyranny, and the mysterious and powerful knowledge of the Rosicrucian Brotherhood. A further year later, in 1616, a third manifesto was published, this time in Strasbourg, Germany, entitled Die Chemische Hochzeite Christiani Rosenkreuz, The Chemical Wedding of Christian Rosenkreuz. In this manuscript, Christian Rosenkreuz himself narrates the text and describes his experiences as a guest and not the bridegroom, as the title might suggest, at the wedding of a king and queen who live in a magnificent castle. The whole event develops into a type of initiation where the guests are subjected to many tests, and some are killed and revived again due to a special alchemical operation. This publication has many fascinating and unusual symbols, many of which are still being studied today. But after the publication of these three compositions, controversy arose in Germany. Some people wanted to join. Others claimed to be members. And soon so much material was in existence that the entire matter just became very, very confusing. The Rosicrucians denied the ordinary chemical theory that the fuel that nourishes a flame must of necessity be converted into byproducts, declaring that the spiritual essence of liquid gold can be made to absorb its oily humidity, thus continuously feeding its own flame. If you can make sense of that, you're really good. The hermetic gold, said Robert Fludd, is the outflow of the sunbeam or of light suffused invisibly into the body of the world. Light is sublimated gold, and gold is thus the deposit of light, which of itself generates. Many Rosicrucians claimed to possess the secret of prolonging life, a possibility which no theosophist would deny. If nature is able continually to renew her wasted energies by absorption from the source of energy, why should not man do the same? If the surface waters of certain mineral springs can restore physical vigor, is it illogical to say that if we could get the first runnings from the natural fluids that spring from the earth, we might perhaps find that the fountain of youth is no fairy tale at all? The Rosicrucians were also known as the fire philosophers, and among all the mystics and Kabbalists of the Middle Ages, they alone gave out the true interpretation of the word fire. As the esoteric teachings say, fire is the most perfect and unadulterated reflection, in heaven as on earth, of the one flame. It is life and death, the origin and the end of every material thing. It is divine substance. The Rosicrucians postulated one eternal, boundless, and limitless cause, which they defined as darkness, the root and basis of light. Robert Fludd described it as divinity, latent or at rest, declaring that darkness adopted illumination in order to make itself visible, and that only after the active period of manifestation began did light and darkness appear. Quote, after the active movement from the center began, the radiation or interchange of light and darkness produced spirit and matter. And in the relative counterbalancing, the diversity of things arose. From these rudiments of being, the archetypical scheme arranged itself, which, though one in essence, was triple in manifestation. And that was from Robert Fludd. Fire is a triple principle. Esoterically, it contains a visible flame, the body, and invisible astral fire, the soul and spirit. Its four aspects are heat, or life, light, mind, electricity, chemic or molecular powers, and the synthetic essence beyond spirit, or the radical cause of its existence and manifestation. Every material form, said Robert Flood, contains an eager fire or jewel of light, the development of which brings about its evolution. Thus, all minerals in this spark of light have the rudimentary possibility of plants and growing organisms. Thus, all plants have a rudimentary sensitives which might, in the ages, enable them to perfect and transmute into locomotive new creatures. Thus, all plants pass off into more distinguished highways of independent, completer advance, allowing their original spark of light to expand and thrill with more vivid force. This makes for wonderful reading, it really does. One of the fundamental propositions of the secret doctrine of the Rosicrucians describes all souls as sparks of the universal oversoul. But whereas the spark of life in the lower kingdoms evolves unconsciously to itself through natural impulse, the threefold flame of the human may hasten its evolution through its own self-induced and self-devised efforts. Kind of gets to the heart and soul of this whole thing. As the Rosicrucians taught, although the individual human monad with spiritual self-consciousness and self-knowledge may arrive at that state of perfection in the slow course of its evolution, extending perhaps over millions of years, nevertheless, there is no necessity to wait until nature may, perhaps slowly and unaided, accomplish her object. But she may be assisted by the individual will and effort of those who know how to proceed. The method by which this may be accomplished was outlined in the Rosicrucian maxim: to know, to will, to dare, and to keep silent. To know is the first step, and this knowledge includes an understanding of the laws governing the visible and invisible universe, and involves the study of the complete constitution of nature and of man. Knowledge brings power, and power, if it is to be of any practical value, must be applied. The application of knowledge requires a conscious and deliberate use of will, which, to be effective, must always work in perfect harmony with the universal will. The great will of nature works for the good of all, and the individual who would blend his own will with the universal will must dare to practice good alone. But power, once it has been acquired, may be used for either good or evil purposes. Therefore, the Rosicrucians taught that power should be given only to those who have been sufficiently tested to prove that it would not be misapplied. Their fourth requirement, therefore, was to remain silent about their own powers and knowledge with those with whom it was not expedient to speak. The instructions of the Rosicrucians date from the year 1675 and begin with a warning to their candidate never to use his knowledge for selfish purposes. They inform him that the Brothers of the Rosy Cross have already shown the way to many peoples in many languages and deplore the fact that their efforts have often been misunderstood and their teachings perverted. Then, in the form of an allegory, the candidate is given a description of the way and is told how it may be found. For 100 years after these instructions were written, little is heard of Rosicrucian activities in Europe. Today there are a number of different Rosicrucian organizations, most of which have as their goal the preservation of the Rosicrucian theosophy. One of the largest is the Rosicrucian Fellowship, founded by Max Heindel, who lived from 1865 to 1919. He founded this in 1907. Heindel, born Carl Louis von Grasshoff, was an engineer whose interest in the occult led him to the Theosophical Society shortly after the beginning of the 20th century. The society was successful in establishing a few small groups, but the majority of its efforts have been through various mail-order courses it offers in astrology and the occult. And you've probably seen some advertisements in the backs of certain magazines about that group. The best known of the several Rosicrucian groups in America, the ancient and mystical order Rosicrucis, or AMORC, was founded by Harvey Spencer Lewis, who lived 1883 to 1939, a writer, artist, and occultist who was living in New York City. During the early part of the 20th century, he made contact with a number of occultists and was initiated into a Rosicrucian order in France in 1909. Returning to the United States, he pulled together a group of interested occultists and formally organized the AMORC in 1915. In 1927, their headquarters were established in San Jose and eventually included the Rose Croix University, a planetarium, and the Rosicrucian Research Library. The most well-known structure, the Egyptian Museum, has received a certain amount of acclaim and become a popular tourist attraction in the area. The AMORC has spread throughout the world and has groups in most non-communist countries. In 1867, the Societas Rosicruciana in Anglia was founded by Robert Wentworth Little. And now we're getting up closer to some of our more modern things and some of our interests. He lived from 1840 to 1878, short life. He founded this in Aldermanbury, London. It's a hard neighborhood to pronounce. This was derived from the Societas Rosicruciana in Scotia, to which Brother Little and Brother William James Hugan had been admitted and became very active. The society requires all aspirants for membership to declare a belief in the fundamental principles of the Trinitarian Christian faith, and is further limited to members of Masonic lodges in amity with the Grand Lodge of England. Rather than attempting to further the principles of the original Rosicrucian order, it attempts to imbue its members a desire for intellectual research, particularly relating to the mysteries of the ages, ancient religions, and the like. More to our interest now, the Societas Rosicruciana in Civitatibus Federatus, or SRICF, was founded in Pennsylvania in 1879 by a group of three Philadelphia Masons who had traveled to England in 1878, 1 year earlier, and were initiated into the Societas Rosicruciana in Anglia at the College of York. Under the authority of the Society in Scotland, three colleges were chartered within the United States, and the SRICF was formally formed on September 21st, 1880, with Charles E. Meyer serving as the first Supreme Magus. Not a group desiring to greatly increase its membership, it nevertheless has grown in recent years and now has active colleges in a majority of the 50 United States. Masonic Rosicrucianism was originated as an alternative activity for Masons, and not really in the same vein as the activities of the non-Masonic Rosicrucian groups. While organized in similar manner and with similar governing structure, the Masonic groups tend to focus on a desire for intellectual awareness and research into the esoteric philosophies of past civilizations, particularly as relating to the ancient religions of the world, Eastern philosophies, and the mysteries of the ages. We are very, very fortunate that our SRICF college here in North Carolina is headed up by our chief adept, David Lee Hargett. David, we appreciate you doing that. I happen to serve as what's called the celebrant in the college. And I also have the good fortune of serving as the senior substitute. That's it. I'm the senior deputy supreme magus for the... I guess depending on circumstances. And it certainly will be of interest to all of us to observe what the future might hold as this group continues its search for further enlightenment and knowledge. I hope that you've enjoyed these few thoughts about Rosicrucianism, and particularly in those closing thoughts about Masonic Rosicrucianism. It is a group that certainly I have enjoyed because it really does delve into some very, very in-depth matters. Some of our publications, well, you'd be very, very interested to read some of those and some of the papers that are presented within them. We meet quarterly, and at most of our meetings we have a rather in-depth research paper. The one that I wrote took me 2 years to write, and that one was done a long time ago. I'll have to unearth that one of these days, too. But I appreciate your attention this evening. It's good to be with you, and I appreciate all of you as being members of our Scottish Rite. David, thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it. Thank you.